Peace out, dude.
See you Thursday.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
And let me adjust the mic here a little bit. Good afternoon. It's 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, spoken word program again, airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, in the first hour, from the first round of the January 13th and the Journey Continues open mic reading series held at the Elm Cafe, you'll hear readings by Calista Markotich, Vicky Langelier, Taylor Davies, Joseph Elliott, Kelly Chartier, Bruce Cudmore, Clark Renault, Leanne Terrace, Fiona McMillan, Lee Sadjay, Brent Raycroft, Eric Folsom, Jane McDonald, Liz Huntley Yench, Harlequin Crow, Leo Roberts, and then me. And in the second hour, again from that January 13th and the Journey Continues open mic, in the second round, you'll hear readings by Calista Markotich, Vicky Langelier, Joseph Elliott, Bruce Cudmore, Leanne Terrace, Brent Raycroft, Eric Folsom, Jane McDonald, Liz Huntley Yench, Harlequin Crow, Leo Roberts, and again myself. Just my first mention at the top of every hour is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but I try to preserve that and honor it as much as possible to maintain the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. And I usually don't do this till the second hour, but just in case you're tuning in for like the first time, just a brief mention about how this open mic works. Readings in the round are essentially done from a sign-up sheet at the door. Each poet, when they are signs in when they come in that wants to read, and then when I call them up and they read one poem and then sit down, and we go through the list of names, everybody that's signed up, and then what happens after that, we take a short break, and then the second round begins. So you're going to hear the first round, and in case you happen to tune in just a minute or so late and didn't catch me announce the names at the top of the hour, I'll do it again here. Here we go. From the January 13th and the Journey Continues open mic reading at the Elm Cafe. And I do announce these, except for Calista. For some reason, I didn't have the recorder set to go before. So anyway, just remember that first one. But I also announce everybody else as they come up to the mic. So anyway, you're going to hear Calista Markotich, Vicky Langelier, Taylor Davies, Joseph Elliott, Kelly Chartier, Bruce Cudmore, Clark Renault, Leanne Terrace, Fiona McMillan, Lee Sadjay, Brent Raycroft, Eric Folsom, Jane McDonald, Liz Huntley Yench, Harlequin Crow, Leo Roberts, and then myself. And let's go ahead and just jump right into it now.
Hi, and Happy New Year. I don't know whether to feel like it's been 2026 for a long time or a short time. It feels like a lot has happened. This poem is called Death and Taxes. And I just, only background point that I probably should make is that That was set by Benjamin Franklin. You might have known that. But he made it in terms of the Constitution of the United States. He said it might work, but it might not, because the only sure thing in life is death and taxes. So it seems like that's proving true. But this is nothing about the United States. Death and taxes. Good wool wicks water, but inside Ben Franklin's soaked frock coat, his flesh is cadaver rigid. Oh, he may not die of chill tonight, but he will die. It's one of the two certainties. Whereas the raindrop pendant from his nose suggests the antenna on his rigging kite up there might never attract the lightning. And tonight, Alex orders death and taxes. The bitters coddle the Scotch's stout heart, and we raise our sparkling glasses to simulated firmament of lit star-dusted indigo and the other death and taxes, dry, non-gustatory, looms ghostly aloof, reminding us we're tired, and Dawn's aunt has died, and next it's her financials, like soaked hemp kite string dripping with duty. And we're on the front line now. We say goodnight, kids. Goodnight, kids. We do not say goodbye. We pay the tab and link arms to traverse the slippery lot. We hold each other up by elbows and sleeves and lust for the yawn of our wide white bed, and we lie down side by side. So long as no one comes and lays a lily on our chest, the zest of morning coffee will let us know another day is ours. Tonight, it took 5 minutes from bar to table, death and taxes, in the glitter of cut glass, the strong certainty of scotch, a dark topaz glow, a bloom of bitter surely in its depth.
As we give Calista another hand, let's bring up Vicky Longelier, something like that.
Hello. Hi, Vicky. Hi, Jane. There's a saying in Zen Buddhism, you should see the Buddha in the road, slay him. And I'm not going to explain the whole thing, but maybe you might pick it up from the poem. The poem is in two parts. Not standing in the same river twice. I am the Buddha I slay. If I am a rat in a maze, it is of my own construct. If dogma drenches my ardor, I am the preacher. Our internal compass broadcasts from source the next move. A version of free will. Intuition points the way, leap or lie down. Conscience guides, strike or soothe. My biomechanism knows, gorge or fast. What tremendous responsibility in co-creating this universe, aligning with the macrocosmic flow, means to know every second is unique. Snowflakes in an eternal blizzard. Can we live every second as a newborn, without preconception, as a black hole eating all the shoulds and oughts? It's going to take some practice. Such accountability would make us sovereign. Therefore, I am the Buddha I slay, and everyone else can just shut their face. My arm is a flesh-colored swath through the morning shades of blue and gray, Wall, sheets, lamp, headboard, an understimulating palette begins the day. I call this painting Peaceful Repose, and this is the path I use to pray to a God who is neither far nor close, yet for great love I vow to slay. For creation is created every second, the Creator ever present. To slip into dogma or attachment is to miss the waking moment in its purest form. Even the poem disassembles as tea is poured, then evaporates into sunlit air.
So give Vicki another hand. Let's bring up Taylor Davies.
Hello again. Long time no see. I wrote this at the beginning of December. A week before, I had been with my grandmother when she passed away in the ICU very suddenly. And I wrote it before Poetry Night in December, but I didn't really feel ready to read it. So hopefully I'll be able to do it this time. I've worn your wedding band every day since it became mine, which means I've worn it for exactly 1 week. You wore it for more than 60 years, on a ring finger so small that it will only fit on my pinky. Something about this adjacence is comforting. The symbolism and acknowledgement of our many similarities and many more differences. 1 week ago, I held your hand the most I have since I was very small. I fidgeted with your engagement and wedding bands in a way that was meant to be comforting, but, I worry, became frantic. Your rings have sat side by side for so long that they're warped, each smoothed by its decades-long companion. They'll be separated shortly after I gently remove them from your cooling fingers in that ICU bed and slide them onto my mother's necklace chain for safekeeping. Days later, my sister and I will come to wear them, her with your engagement ring now cushioned by a Band-Aid until it can be resized, and me with your tiny wedding band. We talk about how flashy the engagement ring is, how Poppy must have picked it out, and how no one seems to know why your wedding ring has an emerald in it. But I've always admired emeralds over diamonds, so I don't mind this small mystery. I'm reminded of the deep green of a thick forest, somewhere we both loved to be as both children and adults. Your forests were salt and lichen, mine hemlock and pond water. You, like me, had no penchant for shiny things, raised out around the bay in a wilderness that I often see in my dreams. Simple luxuries, sweetened milk from a can and homemade bread. Your mother would walk the path ahead of you on the way to school and knock the rainwater from the branches overhead, and I imagine you watching the drops with delight as they fall, glittering with rare Newfoundland sun while the bay murmurs in the background. You were the youngest of eight children and the smallest, and as you faded, you took up even less room. I, the middle child and second oldest grandchild, moved to fill that space next to your bed as your breathing slowed across the hours. My mother, your oldest daughter, held your hand with both of hers, and I gripped her warm shoulders as though trying to contain something. Our three generations, more than 150 years combined, holding as tightly as we could to remain together. The room was so full, but I could only feel you two. The thought enters my mind suddenly that, although I don't often feel connected to femininity, this is the closest I will ever get to it. Your breasts became the tide that afternoon, and we all were drawn very near by your pull. I feel you pull often still. I kissed your forehead three times, then four, then laid my cheek above your eyes. Your tide had come to rest for the moment, at least, and I wondered why I had never had the courage to kiss your sweet forehead before now. Thank you.
Thank you, Taylor. And as we give Taylor another hand, let's bring up Joseph Elliott.
Sorry to read kind of a sad one after that. It's a couplet of haiku, so they'll be short at least. I hope I haven't read the second one before, but now it's a pair, so if I have, forgive me. Pediatric ward. Balloons hang on a fire door. A twist of light rainbows the lanyard. Another diagnosis. Thank you.
So give Joseph another hand. Let's bring up Kelly Chatier.
Hey all, glad to be back. I don't have anything new for you, but this isn't exactly a poem. It's a fictional news clipping with some themes that are very factual. It's called Breaking the Cycle of Hopelessness with Hope Cookies. Mary Tyke is tackling hopelessness with smiley cookies. I used to only give them to my customers when they looked like they've had a bad day, she's explained. Now I give them to my employees too. Everyone needs a little hope. Profits at Pandora's Cafe have not risen enough for Mary to be able to give her staff a pay raise to combat financial trouble and uncertainty they are facing. They come to work tired, sad, talking pessimistically. I don't like that, she says while taking a fresh batch of cookies out of the oven. Currently, there is a sharp rise in mental illness, substance abuse, financial distress, and homelessness, all creating an epidemic of hopelessness. Originally, Mary admits that she tried to snap her workers out of those emotions. It's just unacceptable in the workplace. So I discipline them. Sometimes I'd have to let them go if they didn't act better around our customers, until I saw one of my terminated staff living in a tent in the park. Then I thought punishing isn't helping anything. Of those suffering from hopelessness, there is a high likelihood that they'll also suffer from further concurrent disparities. Mary used to think that meant that a miserable attitude led to miserable results. Now she's changed her mind. It snowballs. A bad thing happens, they come to work sad, they get punished for being sad, which makes things worse. The bad stuff keeps building until they hit rock bottom. Adjacent to the oven is a table covered with cooled cookies. Mary pipes a little yellow smile on every one of them. Once hardened, they each individually placed into their own little paper bags. Mary collects a handful of bags. People are having a hard time keeping their chin up nowadays, but I remind all of my workers that the last thing Pandora found at the bottom of her box was hope. Then she gives each one of her workers a bag before she closes her cafe for the night.
As we give Kelly another hand, let's bring up Bruce Cudmore.
Hello. I wrote this last week, so bear with me. It's called Fields of Barley. Peace drops like grain from chaff in this breeze of unexpected quiet. After doing the dinner dishes, one child in the bath, the fireplace banked, the dog at my feet. The glass of beer in my hand occasions the urge to write about fields of barley. Instead, I should just listen to Fields of Gold. The arc of that song is about all the time I have. Telepathically, I tell the dog to stay and wait for me to get a pen and notebook. His fur, a hill of ripened grain. I think he'll be in this poem. But as the pen stock quivers over the page, responsibilities come calling, and the breeze fades. I swirl, then swig the last ounce of beer as a harvest, and trust that somewhere fields of barley grow in a poem.
As we give Bruce another hand, let's bring up Clark Renault.
Hi. everyone. This is called Left Bower. Night comes so fast nowadays. My stomach's hot and my mouth is dry. Concentration turns to contemplation. Can't help but to ask why. Sprung out of the house this morning, slipped on ice and hit my head. Is my mind going fuzzy? I think I'll just have a drink instead. It was nice seeing you yesterday. Your eyes were glazed and your voice was low. I hugged you but couldn't feel you. Please tell me, where did you go? I'm free to sleep till noon, but alone with no one to wake me. It gets so loud and busy during the holidays, but I've been quiet lately. Sam Cooke sounds nice on the record. I play it over and over again. Imagination brings me to that sacred place. Hold me close and let it spin. I started biting my nails like I used to. Not nervous, but maybe just bored. I can't forget the past with patience. Hell, distraction is all I can afford. I'm pretty good at euchre, but not great. Deal the cards, I'll be your left bower. I'm playing and listening, but sitting while drifting, wishing away the hour. Dealer, what's with this hand?
As we give Clark another hand, let's bring up Leanne Terrace.
A very happy new year, everyone. It's wonderful to be back here. I haven't been here in a long time, so it means a lot. I wrote this early in December. I had a two-year dry creative spell, so I've broken it, I'm happy to say. Blessed am I, gratitude. I like the sound and weight of the word. Hearty and meaty, substantial, ending with a bit of a thud. It so fully embraces a concept of such humility and plenty, expressing much more than mere appreciation, by acknowledging and honoring thankfulness, counting one's blessings. These past two difficult years bring a keen awareness that I have many blessings indeed. They are bountiful, gifts that I treasure with delight and awe, precious, longstanding, and rather extraordinary. My dearest cousin, who has known me since my birth, long before the dark visitor. She has always been like a sister, fierce, dedicated, and devoted in her loyalty and love. My brother, always there for me, ready to gently take my hand and pull me from the deep abyss, cheering me on when I at long last climb up and come out the other side. And in his own words, I am like a butterfly emerging from her cocoon. My dear husband of decades, so many years together, through thick and thin, through joyful and buoyant times, through all my dark and troubled times, so trying but never breaking us, and eventually triumphing. I always return to the light, once again radiating my own. All the beloved friends, like a knitted chain of prized gemstones, I wear close to my heart. Some old, some more new, many have traveled the same tough road and tricky terrain, fought similar demons, gaining insight, faith, resilience, and enormous empathy. Incredibly, they have all stuck by me with compassion, commitment, and endless love. For all of these cherished ones, I am tremendously grateful. They have been invaluable in willing and inspiring me to keep fighting the shadows, to keep chasing the light, until it glimmers with a flicker, then glows oh so brightly, encompassing me in its restoring hope and joy. Blessed am I for such a rich and beautiful life. Thank you.
As we give Leanne another hand, let's bring up Fiona McMillan.
Hello, everyone. I'm really pumped to be back. I was doing my ritual today and going through my file on my computer and trying to figure out what I was going to read. And I found an old one that I wrote a long time ago, and it's about my roommate, Nora. And I remember I read it to her one time, and I was very drunk, and it was right after my birthday. And I had written it forever ago, and I felt like it was one of those things that I could only read to her if I wasn't fully coherent. But that was like 6 months ago, and I want to try to read it now, sober, because I really mean it, and I think it's very sweet. Okay. It goes like this. I knew Nora loved me when we were 19. There are many things that led me to this fact, and my palms grow sweaty as I think about my incoming opportunity to explain each of them to you. I think I'm worried that I won't do our love story justice, and I think I'm excited to prove that wrong. I knew Nora loved me when we were 19. We met in a dining hall, and I was immediately not afraid of her, as I am with most people. She looked me in the eyes the entire dinner, and she was the only one who wanted seconds of dessert. They were serving some sort of dry loaf that night, a real nothing-to-write-home-about amalgamation of lemon and cream, so when she offered to come up with me for seconds, I knew her motives existed far beyond crumbly sugar coatings. I knew she was in it for a little bit more. Nora and I became the most physically far version of star-crossed lovers this world or campus had ever seen. She studied science, the body, the lungs, organic chemistry, pretty much everything I couldn't dare to understand. I studied art, painted naked men, read Nietzsche, and cried a lot, things I didn't think she ever really cared about. I don't think two people could have been more different, but yet we met at the end of our shared days, and she still decided to love me. I knew Nora loved me when we were 19. Thank you.
As we give Fiona another hand, let's bring up Lee Sajay.
How's it going, everybody? One time I met a holy man. He didn't wear robes or don a fancy title. He wore sandals. And he smiled. Drenched in golden light, the man shined, and he changed me. I asked the man, "What do you do to become this way?" To which he answered, "At the risk of being crude, I make love to everything." He went on to explain how, just as one surrenders in vulnerability to a lover, he surrenders to the ways of a willow tree. The same reverence we feel for our partners, we can extend to all things. That sensuality, that eternal ecstasy, can be accessed anytime, anywhere. Let the sky envelop you. Allow the water to consume you in bliss. Intimacy is a pathway to the sacred. How deeply can you love? Thank you.
As we give Lee another hand, let's bring up Brent Raycroft.
Happy New Year, everybody. This is one that the germ of which I wanted to write a poem about for a long time, but I sort of got around to it finally. Nails. By crowbar, by pry bar, by claw hammer and bait, a spike of a nail comes out and into the light. With a shattering squawk that hurts my ears, a bang, 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 but faster than that, a short, sharp din, a speedy recap in reverse of the blows that drove it in. I kneel tight-lipped where another kneeled, and hear, as I undo it, the work of an unknown hand. I'm bringing to its end the useful life of a sturdy structure they once planned. I'm sure it served them well, of stringers and studs and planks. These big nails are not ruined, just bent. Some will be reused, so thanks.
As we give Brent another hand, let's bring up Eric Folsom.
Hi, thank you. So in December, I read half of a poem. I've been working on it since. And it's up to 11 stanzas. And I think I better still divide it into two parts. And I don't think all of you were here in December. And besides, I've changed this. So I'm going to start at the beginning, read half the poem. And then after the break, I'll read the other half of the poem. The other thing I should maybe explain is my family was a little complicated growing up. My birth mother died. My father remarried. And then my second mother raised me from age 8 on, my adoptive mother. So I had 3 sets of grandparents. One set that I'm not genetically related to. Okay? The book smuggler. He grew thinner as the cancer ate his stomach. Broad Lithuanian face behind thick glasses, he withstood the coarse pain of peritonitis, stoicism I was too young to comprehend. He who organized polka contests after work could no longer deal with a pilsner after dinner. In front of my adolescent eyes, he faded before I ever heard the stories of his youth. Lithuania, when my grandfather was born, was one more conquered land in the Russian Empire. His birth certificate in Cyrillic letters said Volbaniki, born in 1892, possibly a Russian name for Vadalinkas, thatched country farmhouse with a black and white photo, from a black and white photo, large wooden cross, by a garden stuffed with flowers, 16 or so peasant relations in the yard. Subsistence farmers like most Lithuanians, acquainted with woodlands, fond of mushroom hunting, Catholic believers ever since the Teutonic Knights strong-armed their ancestors into becoming Christians. Old folktales, dances, and music somehow survived since the times when sparrows could speak and the bison provided their horns for the hero's drinking cup. Long history the Russians tried to tear away. The crackdowns began after a failed uprising. Lithuanian books would all be henceforth banned. Children's classes at school would be in Russian only. Identity, belief, a nation's traditions, people's own voices wiped out, assimilated. But the church had money, and across the border in East Prussia, the Germans had printing presses. Kastan, my grandfather, became a book smuggler. I can't actually say that. Ignatius, a traveling book carrier. Older brother Antanas became a teacher, master of a clandestine school in the barn, teaching local kids to read in their own language, linking Lithuanians through ink and paper to knowledge young Kastan doled out from his backpack. Swift forest runner, a harder quarry to catch. But a teacher makes a stationary target. The name for the month of August was Rumpurcio. And the rye cutting, literally the harvest time. On horseback, the Cossacks galloped through the village, driving straight for the barn, breaking into the school. The children scattered, many of them got away, dashing for the woods while soldiers gathered their books. They grabbed Antanas, dragged him up against the wall, summoned relatives to watch his execution. Thank you.
So give Eric another hand. Let's bring up Jane McDonald.
Hello. Happy New Year. Really, truly. That sounded a little bit casual, but I do mean it. Happy New Year, everybody.
You too.
Thank you, Calista. All right, this is a new one. I bring new ones here that aren't worked out. So anyway, here we go. The breathing is called The Breathing Lands Are Covered by Treaty Number 9. Here in the south, Canada geese high in alkali sky above trees, fly between corn stubble and the lake, the ones that stayed and a language on the wing. The last leaf, copper-colored, crumpled, clings to the oak, a crawling in my eye's corner as if a spider's eight legs. My neighbor, slow walking in sickness, critical, diminished, has not died. He's breathing up in Belleville. Though she rarely visits, he loves her, knows well her bicameral heart. Their house, she's dressed these days in her favorite lithium glimmer. He'll be back. Summer does return, the slow bleed of white to wet mud to green hurry. Now, in winter, chromium blue and wisps, the light is merciful. Let it be the judge in his courtroom on University Avenue who, hearing the arguments, finds precedence, accepts the nation's framing, generosity, promise, affiliation to the land. Let the light that never went away return to this rare earth, pink and possible, its long cobalt shadows.
To give Jane another hand, let's bring up Liz Huntley Yench.
So I am organizing a poetry event in the West End because why does downtown get all the fun? So it's called Common Language. It's on February 14th, which is a Saturday. I own a coffee bar called Grains and Goods. It's very tiny, but it's attached to a yoga studio, which has a spacious reception area. So we will be in the yoga studio area and also have access to the coffee bar, which will be open. I'll be reading some poems supported by a friend of mine who's an amazing bass player coming from Germany, Daniel Buchstieg. And then I also have two of my favorite, and I think maybe also some of your favorite poets reading. Bruce and Callie will also be sharing some poems there. So it's a great thing, I think, and I hope you will find your way out to the West End, the far, far away West End. It's really close to the mall. There's a bus stop right there. And also in the West End, parking is ample and always free. So... I have some flyers. I'll just, like, leave them up here and feel free to grab one if you are interested. I have not written anything new recently, and I was looking for some older poems that were seasonal, but it turns out January is fucking depressing, so I have a summer poem for you tonight. And maybe some of you heard me read it before. This one is called Hornworms. There are hornworms lurking amongst the tomato plants, rippling green and fat as my thumb. I'm inclined to kill them when I find them, but my husband captures two in a glass jar with a mesh cover. He's convinced that we can feed them and observe their metamorphosis, chrysalis to giant mottled moth, a science experiment for the benefit of the kids. We fill the jar with lush stalks of tomato plants and a sturdy branch on which the hornworms might cocoon. They set to eating and pooping at an alarming rate, chomping through the leaves as fast as we can replenish them and leaving inches of goopy green droppings in the bottom of the jar. Alas, the hornworms do not love this new environment. After a few days, they burrow into the heaping pile of their own shit and die. This prompts many questions from my 5-year-old. What happens to them next? Where does a hornworm go after it dies? Perhaps they come back as something else, a pair of sisterly cows, a couple of squawking crows. This speculation helps him to deal with the more pressing question of what happens to us after we die. On this, he likes to speculate too. We'll come back as a family of frogs or a herd of goats. One day, while driving to the grocery store, he imagines we'll come back as car seats. Then we can all drive around together, he says. I don't have the courage to tell him we probably don't come back together, probably not even as our whole selves. Maybe a bit of his carbon recycled in a grass root, his iron taken up by a fruiting tree, a breathful of his air passed from lung to lung to lung. Maybe his soft heart nestled into the prayer fold of a grasshopper's wings, his soul in the thrumming body of a hummingbird. Maybe even a little of his bone dust gets woven into the fabric of a car seat. He has bigger questions. What came before the first thing? What happens after everything dies, after the sun burns out? I don't know, I tell him. Maybe nothing. Maybe it begins all over again. Maybe we all come back as hornworms in a glass jar.
As we give Liz another hand, let's bring up Harlequin Crow.
So irony, I also picked a summer poem because the weather sucks, and it can be found in my new chapbook. Yay! Novel Idea has them, and I have a few copies with me if anyone's interested. So, Sunkissed. Warmth bathes chest, hips, thighs, lips. No hidden intimacy as the sun savors each body basking in its glow. Exposed. Offered to affections. Sighs teased from sensations. And then gasps. Thank you.
As we give Corey another hand, I think I saw someone else come in who wants to read. Let's bring up Leo Roberts.
Okay. I really should print these out so you guys don't have to watch me enter my password every time.
Hi, Leo.
Hello. Baby's first chapbook again. Yay. If you want one, ask me nicely. So the funny thing about living here for a while now is that a grocery store can elicit immense heartache in you, but you still need to buy eggs. So here we go. You once gifted me the name darling, handmade, velveteen, the softest word I've known. Forgive me for regifting the title to someone new. But we're no longer darlings, and the gift would be sad unused. I once loved you in a grocery store, a pharmacy, the walk in between. Back then, just convenient, and now a lamentation. Forgive me for lamenting her on a walk that was once about you. Did I disservice your memories by forcing them in the same space? Then again, there was room enough beside me for either of you.
As we give Leo another hand, we've heard some incredible poetry and other readings this evening. Let's give yourselves and everybody else another hand. Uh, I'm going to read a poem that'll take us to the break. I don't think I skipped anybody, did I? I'll read a poem that will take us to the break, and then we'll come back after a short break for a second round. I'll go around and find out who's brought an extra poem. So, but thank you all for coming out tonight. You are, I always say this every time, you are what makes this the wonderful reading series that it is. This is called New Pen. This new pen, a gift. Ink, colored brown. A poet's pen. It's ink of soil. Found a small journal, and in it planted letters on a page in this brown ink. That small book then closed. But in that first time, it will be reopened. A full poem. Its words then on a page. Green and full as a field of clover. A boreal forest of ever tree. Or a single blade of grass. A drop of dew glistening, dancing on its tip. Thank you. Enjoy your break, everybody. It's been a while, so you get to catch up.
Tune in Sundays at 11 p.m. for Orchestral Maneuvers After Dark with me, DJ Square. Each episode features a great mix of new and vintage, Canadian and international, new wave, funk, post-punk, garage rock, pop, electronica.
It won't bother you. Sorry about that, everybody. I just couldn't get my mouse to work correctly or something. I don't know. Anyway, before that mess you just heard from the first round of the January 13th and the Journey Continues open mic reading at the Elm Cafe, readings by Calista Markotic, Vicky Langelier, and Taylor Davies, Joseph Elliott, Kelly Chartier, Bruce Cudmore, Clark Renault, Lee Ann Terrace, Fiona McMillan, Lee Sajay, Brent Raycroft, Eric Folsom, Jane McDonald, Liz Huntley Yench, Harlequin Crow, Leo Roberts, and then me. First thing I'd like to do is thank each of you out there for having tuned in to the first segment of the show today, and I hope you can stay tuned for the second segment for more. Again, that will be the second round. I would also like to thank all of those who participated that evening and those who read their poetry, and also those who came to listen and support. That's always such a wonderful thing. And then also to our barista, who took good care of us that evening. And, of course, as always, to the Elm Cafe for being there and for caring and being such a supportive venue. And gonna see where I am at here. Let's do this. I'm trying to just line things up here a little bit. And I do have some time. I should give you the time, too. It's 49 minutes to after 4 o'clock, and I will have some time. I'm actually going to include a piece of music as well. I do have some time maybe for some calls for events. And let's see where I've got. Sorry, just trying to line things up here. Let's go ahead and just do this, and then I'll be right back. How's that?
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Tune in to Word Labs Out Loud, your weekly writing spark on CFRC 101.9. Join your host, Arrow McCauley, for a free-flow show where words, ideas, and music mingle. Each week, we sit down with one of the local authors and artists leading writing workshops through the Word Labs program. They'll share their stories, their insights, maybe even a few secrets of their craft. Get your pens ready. After the chat, you'll get writing prompts to stretch your imagination, all set to a soundscape designed to help you focus, relax, and create. Tune in to Word Labs Out Loud. Your week.
Tune in Sundays at 11 p.m. for Orchestral Maneuvers After Dark with me, DJ Squared. Each episode features a great mix of new and vintage, Canadian and international, new wave, punk, post-punk, garage rock, pop, electronica, ambient, and even the occasional remix. Sweet beats are in store for all to enjoy. Join in the fun, OMD, every Sunday at 11 right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
I just discovered what happened in there at the very start. So anyway, I want to say you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. It is 52 minutes after 5 o'clock. I hope you, again, can stay tuned for the second hour today. I've got just a couple of minutes here to mention some calls for submissions. There are two coming up very quickly, or three. Three coming up very quickly. Malahat Reviews and Novella Prize is deadlines February 1st. Prize is $2,000. They'll be publishing the work in their 2026 issue. 10,000 to 20,000 words is what they're looking for. So go to their website, malahatreview.ca, and then just look for their Novella Prize contest. The next, again, February 1st, another one, February 1st, the Masters Review with their 2025-26 Winter Short Story Award for New Writers. Again, this is a... deadline is February 1st and at midnight, actually, or 11:59, actually. And, man, they are looking for 6,000 words of narrative nonfiction. Again, new writers, first place, $3,000. They do have second and third prize as well. Go to themastersreview.submittable.com and look for their 2025-26 Winter Short Story Award. Also, the Kingston Fringe Festival 2026 TK Fringe Festival. Their deadline for applications is February 2nd. Go to www.theaterkingston.com. The event takes place in August, but if you want to take part, you have to get your application in by February 2nd. Lottery pull is towards the end of the month. And so, yeah. And go to www.theaterkingston.com and look for about the TK Fringe. And with that, I am going to play a song to take us to the top of the hour. Again, thank you for tuning into the first hour today, and you'll catch more of this after. I'm going to play a song off of one of my favorite Beck albums. It came out in 2002. It's called Sea Change. The song is called around the bend. Enjoy. I'll catch you here right at the top of the hour. How's that? Get it set up here. There we go.
Well, then.